The art of disagreement in beloved community. Shall we begin by talking about the elephant in the room? That is, the arbutus in the room. This sermon was prompted by a concrete dilemma that is facing our congregation. The three-piece tapestry, or triptych, behind the choir, entitled Arbutus Coast, was given as a gift to our congregation. It was made by Carol Sabiston, the same artist who made the tapestry that usually hangs on this wall, the bluish circle design called Continuous Rhythms. Here is the dilemma. Some people love the Arbutus triptych. Some people don't care for it at all. Some people like it fine, but don't want it in this space. They point out that the blue rhythms piece was designed for our sanctuary, whereas the Arbutus piece was designed for a large bank lobby in which it originally hung. They feel it is not suited to this space. And so we have a disagreement in beloved community. So what do we do? How does a community of nearly 300 people come to a decision about something so personal as taste in art? The straightforward democratic way would be to vote. But someone always loses in a vote. If the rhythms piece won, fans of the Arbutus would be upset. If the Arbutus piece won, fans of rhythms would be upset. We could compromise. We could do a percentage vote. Maybe one piece would be up for 2/3 of the year, and the other would be up for 1/3 of the year. Then we'd have 1/3 of the people upset 2/3 of the time, and 2/3 of the people upset 1/3 of the time. I'm not sure that would be much better. There are other options. It has been suggested that part of the triptych could be hung on the side wall back there, but then, of course, that would not satisfy those who really like seeing it all together. I have heard of churches splitting over things like this, people leaving in a huff because they don't like the color of a new carpet. We might think that sounds silly, but though I do not care about carpet colors, I do understand a bit of the feeling that gets stirred up in these disputes. We talk about this as our spiritual home. Many among us have brought here our deepest longings, our worries, our grief. Tears have been shed. Hugs have been shared. Healing has been felt. Those tears and hugs have made this space sacred, special. The way a certain scent in the air can stir up an emotion from your childhood, stepping into a sanctuary can, over time, evoke deep emotions. You can come to feel that when you step into this room on a Sunday, a warm, loving spirit wraps around you and holds you through whatever is going on in your life. We feel it to differing degrees at different moments. It can be enhanced sometimes when someone here smiles at us warmly, when we see a child speaking with an elder earnestly, or when a particular piece of music touches us. Just being in the space, gazing upon the art, the chalice, the light coming in the windows, can have a soothing effect on your spirit. It can be upsetting when the feel of a sacred space such as this is threatened by some sort of change. The arts and aesthetics team at our church understands this. That's why they have been doing such a beautiful job of shepherding us through this decision process. Technically, arts and aesthetics is empowered to make this decision themselves. That's their job. They take care of the decorative and aesthetic aspects of our buildings. But they understand that the central wall of the sanctuary carries extra weight, and they understand that their role is not to choose what they want personally, but to discern what might be best for the congregation as a whole. Last fall, they hung the triptych panels on the side wall, two together and one off to the side, and asked you for your reactions. Many of you said you couldn't really get a feel for the whole if the panels were separated, so this month, the triptych hangs all together on our central wall. The arts and aesthetics team is asking you to spend some time considering how you feel about Arbutus Coast in this location, and again, to share with them your input. There is a feedback form in the April newsletter with questions for you to answer and a list of the team members. Unitarian Universalist churches function through a church governance form called congregational polity. It is the most democratic of church governances. It is the opposite of the top-down governance called episcopal polity, used in Catholic and Anglican churches. In our polity, congregational polity, the power resides with the people. You choose your leaders, including your ministers, and it is the job of the leaders, both lay people and clergy, to do our best to serve the congregation and the mission that you, the congregation, created. So the arts and aesthetics team and I are facilitators. Our challenge is to help our beloved community work through this disagreement in a way that fulfills our mission. Ah, our mission. Could we see this as an opportunity to practice living out our mission? When you discerned our purpose last fall, you distilled four main elements of our mission: spiritual growth, welcoming and supporting one another with compassion, embracing diversity, and helping to heal our larger world. Working with differences of opinion within a community challenge us on points 2 and 3, supporting one another with compassion, and embracing diversity. Unitarian Universalists have long prided ourselves on how well we welcome diversity in its many forms: race, age, gender expression, sexual orientation, theology. Oddly, in some ways, I think we've had the hardest time with theological diversity. We are fairly unique in the wide range of theological beliefs we encompass: theist, atheist, humanist, Jewish, Buddhist, Hindu, Christian, earth-centered, non-specific, spiritual. For a long time, it seems to me, we merely tolerated this difference in theology. A humanist could sit next to a Christian, but they wouldn't necessarily talk to each other about their spiritual practices. And there was a certain defensiveness with which each guarded their spiritual turf. Each felt marginalized upon occasion. The humanists felt excluded if someone led a prayer. The Christians felt they couldn't use the word God in mixed company. In recent years, however, our Unitarian Universalist faith is maturing. We are learning how to grow through engaging with one another's spiritual experiences. We talk and listen to one another with openness, not feeling threatened or defensive, but instead interested and enriched. You like horses? How interesting. I like dogs. I say we are maturing. That is not to say there's no room for growth. When you are in a community of people with different viewpoints, it is a constant challenge, a spiritual practice even, to figure out how to do two things. One, how to express one's own opinion in a way that is not hurtful or demeaning to others. Two, how to listen in a way that opens oneself to the experience of another. Let's look at each in turn. One, how to express one's own opinion in a way that is not hurtful or demeaning to others. Many of us have, no doubt, unknowingly or unintentionally, hurt someone else's feelings with an involuntary rolling of the eyes or snarky comment. This often happens when we assume that others in the room agree with us. An ex-Catholic Unitarian Universalist will say something disdainful about Christian beliefs and hurt the feelings of a Unitarian Universalist Christian. A UUNDP supporter will roll their eyes in derision about a politician from another party and hurt the feelings of a UU who voted for that politician. The key is to express your opinion in a way that does not imply insult to whoever may hold a different point of view. I remember encouraging my congregants in the States to try to follow these guidelines. Critique content, not people. Use I statements. Use feeling statements. So instead of saying, George Bush is an idiot. Try. Now. Here's another way you can express your opinion without hurting anyone's feelings. Try this. I disagree with Bush's policy on XYZ because I am afraid that it will hurt those who are already struggling in poverty. That's an I statement. It's not attacking people. It's expressing your feelings. So here's a spiritual practice for you. Try to catch yourself before your eyes roll. Here's a test. Stephen Harper. Harder for some of you than others. Try to express your opinions in a way that does not demean those who may have a different point of view. How we express ourselves is challenge number one. How we listen is challenge number two. In our mission statement, we say that we seek to transform ourselves. We seek spiritual growth. We seek enrichment through diversity. We cannot grow in this way if we don't open ourselves to others. Here's a spiritual practice to try for challenge number two, the art of listening. Next time someone is expressing their opinion, especially if it is an opinion with which you disagree, as an experiment, try this. Don't argue. Don't try to convince them of your opinion. Just listen. Try to discern the feelings that undergird their opinion. What do they care about? What are they worried about? Take as your spiritual task to understand them better. If you strive to walk in the ways of compassion, if you seek enrichment through diversity, when you find yourself in disagreement, the key to both expressing yourself and listening to the other is to focus on the feelings, the emotions that undergird both sides of the disagreement. When we focus on emotions, we strengthen relationship. When we focus solely on outcome and getting our own way, we weaken relationship. One of the vows my spouse Shauna and I took on our wedding day, and one we have evoked repeatedly since then, was this pledge. I promise to be sensitive to the ways in which you are not like me, seeking to be patient with our differences and open to what they have to teach me. Like a marriage, being in a congregation is a relationship of covenant. When there is disagreement, understanding one another's feelings and experiences is more important, more powerful than winning a particular outcome. When you place value on understanding each other, the relationship grows. When you place value on the outcome, on getting your way, the relationship weakens. And we miss out on an opportunity for personal and spiritual growth. Consider this scenario. Good friends, Kim and Maria, got season tickets to a concert series. Kim doesn't have a car. Maria will drive them both. The night before the first concert, Maria says to Kim, "I have to watch my grandkids until 5 p.m. tomorrow and then make dinner for Mitch. I won't be able to leave the house until 6. Do you think you could take the bus to the corner of Blanchard and Hillside? Then I could just pick you up at 6:30 on the way to the theater and we won't be late." Kim does not want to take the bus. Her back has been hurting, and she's tired of always accommodating Maria and her busy life. But she doesn't want to sound selfish, so she agrees. When Maria picks her up, Kim is distant and cold. After the play, the concert, they go out for tea and dessert. Maria bravely broaches the topic. "Kim, I care about you. I care about us. Something feels tense between us. Can we talk about it?" Kim cautiously assents. They agree to use the "I hear you saying" technique, remembering to use I statements and to focus on expressing and understanding the emotions undergirding the issue. Kim begins. "When you asked me to take the bus, I felt hurt. I feel like you think your time is more valuable than my time because you're so busy with your grandkids and your husband and your community projects. It feels like you think your time is more valuable than mine, which I guess feels like you think you are more valuable than me. And that hurts. Also, my back has been aching, so taking the bus is extra hard for me. And I know you didn't know, but that still made me mad, like rubbing salt in the wound. Also, when you talk about all your family connections, it makes me feel, well, lonely, because I don't have that here." Maria takes a breath and, following the form, begins. "Okay, I hear you saying that when I asked you to take the bus, that made you feel like I don't value your time as much as my time, and that made you feel like I don't value you. And taking the bus hurts your back, which makes you feel extra mad that I was asking you to do it. Also, when I talk about all my family obligations, that makes you feel lonely. Is that accurate?" Kim says yes. Then Maria is cleared to respond to the content. "Oh, Kim, I'm so sorry I hurt your feelings. I'm sorry I made you feel like I don't value you. I'm sorry your back is hurting again. I wouldn't have asked you to take the bus if I knew that. Also, it makes me sad to hear that you've been feeling lonely. I had no idea. When I think of you alone in your quiet house, I envy the peace and independence you have. It didn't occur to me that you feel lonely sometimes. I'm sorry." "Thanks," says Kim. "I know you didn't mean to hurt my feelings, and I appreciate your empathy. Now your turn. What was your experience?" Maria responds, "I've just been at my wit's end, running around, taking care of the grandkids and my husband and everyone. I was so looking forward to this time with you, my dear friend. I saw this as me time, a little treat for myself. But I guess I felt a little guilty about taking the time away from my family, and I didn't want it to impact my daughter or Mitch. I felt like I couldn't change their schedules, so the only way I could think to make it work was to ask you to take the bus. I didn't know about your back, and I didn't realize it would hurt your feelings." Kim mirrors back what Maria said, starting with the "I hear you saying." When Kim gets her chance to respond to the content, she tells Maria, "I'm so sorry you've been so stressed. I'm glad that you consider time with me a break and something you look forward to." As they talk it all through, they have a deeper understanding of one another's experiences and feelings, and they are able to tend to one another with empathy and support, and they work out a plan for subsequent travel that suits them both just fine. Most importantly, they have grown as individuals, and their relationship is strengthened. Maria is often still stressed. Kim is still lonely sometimes, but each is able to bear it better with the deepened support of their friendship. When you tend to the emotions, when you care about the relationship more than getting what you want, sometimes getting what you want becomes less important. I've seen this happen in congregations. Here's a made-up example. The organ at UU Congregation Hypothetical is on its last leg, on its last set of pipes. A proposal is afoot to use some of the endowment funds to pay for needed repairs. Sam thinks that's a horrible idea. He doesn't care for organ music anyway. He thinks they can get by just fine with the piano, and chipping away at the endowment makes him nervous. Since using endowment funds requires a congregational vote, the finance committee hosts listening forums. Sam expresses his views in a very respectful way, without demeaning those who may hold alternate views. He uses I statements and feeling statements. I am worried that spending such a big chunk of our endowment will reduce our investment income to a degree that will force us to cut programs. I really love the programs here. Losing them would make me sad. Sam is listened to with respect and compassion. Many share his worries and say so. Ultimately, however, the congregation votes to spend the money from the endowment on the organ. Now, here's the thing. Sam could stomp away in anger. If this congregation doesn't see that this is a mistake, then I quit. Or a variant thereof. I'll still come to service, but I'm canceling my pledge. But this is not what Sam does. He knows that people care about the congregation and its programs as much as he does. He knows that they care about him. He knows everyone is doing their best to just figure it out. He values relationship over outcome. He graciously accepts that this one vote didn't go his way, and he lets it go. He continues to engage in the life of the beloved community. As someone who, I admit, likes getting my way, I never cease to be awed by congregants who can do that. They argue their case, they get voted down, they accept the will of the larger community, and they continue to love and thrive within it. In personal relationships and in community, when differing views are expressed with respect and compassion, when differing views are listened to with openness and understanding, when the focus is on hearing and understanding the emotions underlying the viewpoints, when folks care more about the people than a particular outcome, relationships deepen and peaceful resolution becomes more possible. This sermon was prompted by the decision we face regarding our sanctuary art, but these insights and techniques apply to other community decisions as well. For example, property, finance, and the board have been grappling with ways to catch up with some delayed maintenance work on our buildings and how to create a long-term plan that will help us keep up with the maintenance as we move forward. Several different ideas are being floated. One is to increase our mortgage to pay for the delayed maintenance. Some have even suggested that we consider using some of our endowment to pay down our mortgage. All of this and more will be discussed at an open forum after church on April 22nd. April 22nd. Whatever arises from that forum will inform the proposals for the congregational vote at our annual meeting on May 13th. I encourage you to come. Back to the art. I said that the Arbutus Coast will be up on this wall for the month of April. At the end of April, on Sunday, April 29th, Arts and Aesthetics and I will run a listening circle to hear your feelings about the triptychs and the rhythms. I've said that expressing your feelings without demeaning others and opening yourself to the experience of others can be a spiritual practice, and one I hope you will try at the listening circle on April 29th. In the meantime, here's another invitation to spiritual growth: communing with art as spiritual practice. Over the course of this coming month, consider, how does this piece affect your spirit? How does it affect your worship experience? Different people have different levels of sensitivity to visual art. Some hardly notice it. Some are deeply affected by it. Some people don't notice but are subtly affected, like how they say doctors' offices are painted in soothing colors to calm the psyche. It was fascinating for me to hear some of the feedback already given to Arts and Aesthetics, how some feel that gazing upon the Blue Rhythms piece during worship soothes their spirit and grounds their meditation, how some find the lines and color of the triptych jarring, even disturbing, how others find comfort and a sense of connection to nature in the images of water and trees in the triptych. How does it affect you? I have found that the spiritual practice of communing with art becomes a richer experience if we intentionally lean away from judgment. Our judgments can get in the way of connecting, experiencing the fullness of something. Judgments shut us down instead of opening us up. So I try to shift from judging to appreciating. Not, is it good or bad? Not even, do I like it or not like it? But more open questions. What do I appreciate about this art? How does it affect me? What does it have to say to me? I like to use an imaginative approach. I imagine that the spirit of life and love, or some kind of God force, inhabits the art, dancing in the lines and the colors. What is it saying through this art? I thought we could end this sermon with a bit of a guided meditation, some time to engage with art as spiritual practice. Choir, feel free to snag some of those front seats if you want to, so you can look at this, or you can just fix your eyes on another art piece. So let's breathe in and breathe out. Take some time to look at the art. Notice the details. Notice the composition, the shapes, the lines, the color. How would you describe it to someone who can't see it? Pretend you have a charcoal pencil. Mentally trace the outline of the major shapes. Pretend you have a box of crayons. What colors would you need to fill in the outlines to replicate the colors you see? Imagine the artist in the process of creation. What emotions did she put into this art? Sit with the whole. Imagine that a spirit of life and love inhabits this art. Look for it. Imagine it dancing, moving, breathing within the art. The spirit knows you. The spirit knows your life, your struggles. What is the spirit saying to you through this art? I I invite you to continue your communion with this art in whatever way works for you over the course of this month. Note your feelings, your reactions, note any shifts over time, then come to our listening circle on April 29th. Come share your own experiences and come listen to what others experienced. My hope is that this process ends up being more important than the outcome. I hope that the conversations we have and the personal spiritual growth we experience becomes more important than which piece or pieces of art ultimately hang on that wall. Even if we end up with a one-third, two-third situation, it is my hope that instead of being having one-third upset and two-thirds of the time and two-thirds upset one-third of the time, all of us will see this as a place of relational depth and spiritual growth all of the time. So may it be. Amen.